What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Also known as the other host.
You know what?
Yeah.
We might finally have a way to settle this sticks and stones argument.
After a tremendous argument, nonstop debate in the comments about who is the true host. Are we both hosts? Are we co-hosts?
Everybody knows that I am the one true host.
There has been significant debate and, you know, we've been trying to figure it out for as long as the pop has been around.
The good news is,
has been able to settle for sure on who the real host is.
I feel like we can all settle for sure. But
I think we can too. The
good news is we have a way. If you care to get involved and support the Popcast along the way, we have created a Patreon page for Popcorn Culture. That page has three different levels, all of which cost $5 a piece.
Right, but they're all the same thing, and it's all about determining who is the true host. And now we have a way of determining it. So
yeah.
I thought this was really funny. The three different tiers we have on our Patreon page for the pop, which by no means do you need to support. This will always be a free
podcast. Always free.
But if you so desire and want to support us on Patreon, you can. And we just have three tiers. One is host Ben,
the best tier.
And one is host Jay, the best tier. The other best tier.
That's it. The other best tier.
Or host neither. And so what we're going to do is whichever tier has the highest amount of
patrons
will be whoever is the current actual host of Popcorn Culture.
Exactly.
So we will know once and for all who is the host.
Once and for always.
Yeah, once and for always, or until the next week if it changes.
If it changes, I know. Oh,
right.
Goodness me. Can you guys guys, Jay aside here, everybody like hold up your hand to the left-hand side of your face so that you're not looking at him as we say this, but like, can you imagine the opening of this show if Jay was reading it? Gosh,
I would have to give you. I'd have to give you my. I could give you my host voice.
No, don't give them reasons to. I can't do it.
What? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture.
It's goodness me. We added just a smidge. Basically what we did was we tied a blanket in front of the door that we record our podcast booth, and for some reason the acoustics are so much better that you're like jazzy man podcast voice. It's like
my jazz radio voice.
I feel like the table is vibrating. Like what is resonance frequency? Is that like how a jackhammer can like take down like an entire building?
Like if it hits just the right spot or something,
right? It turns the whole building into a tuning fork.
Am I about to destroy the table with the low tremble of my jazz voice?
Yes, I believe the table is in doom. It's doomed. So anyway, guys, if you
want
to go
Jazzy J to host your show.
Jazzy J is even a cool name.
That is not as cool as Jazzy J.
It's pretty cool, Buzzy B.
Buzzy B. It just sounds like you're like an actual bee.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm thinking.
Okay,
yeah.
So you're a bumblebee.
Buzzy the bee.
No,
Buzzy B. That's me.
I will say, Jazzy J is a leftover DJ host from a short story I wrote in college.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Tell me about this.
Well, so I took creative writing because...
It shows.
Yeah.
Honestly.
And one of the things you had to do was write like a short story for the class. So my story was, this was the opening line, was, unfortunately for him, Carl was the luckiest man on earth.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I get real good, is it Stranger Than Fiction?
Yes. It was very Stranger Than Fiction. His name's Harold in Stranger Than Fiction.
Right, this
great
is Carl.
Great movie, by the way. This is Carl. It's kind of some up vibes in there as well.
Oh,
but
I like
so
it.
The,
I like
the
it.
Premise of the story was that Carl had the best luck in the world and everything always went his way, but he still wasn't a very happy person.
Oh, interesting. So despite the fact that things always go his way,
right.
the assertion is that does not always deliver fulfillment.
Exactly. That was sort of the direction it was going in. And it was going to be like a, you know... The direction of it was that he was going to meet a girl who he worked with, and only when he was around this girl would unfortunate things happen to him. Like the power would break when he was around this girl. It's like unlucky things would happen to him.
But then he that would
but
make then, him happy.
But he would be happy because he was with her. That was sort of that was the direction it was going in. So there was like a supernatural force causing good luck to happen to him.
So would you be willing to give up being the luckiest man alive
right.
in order to be the luckiest man
right.
alive?
But there were also like complications with it as well, where like he might fortunately not have been hit by something that got knocked off of a construction site, but then it would hit someone else or something.
Oh, I don't like that.
So right, yeah, so he would have like this, like, I didn't get hit, which was really lucky, but then he would like feel guilty because he knows this power exists or something. Anyway, I didn't end up finishing the story, but as you can see, I've thought about it a lot more since then, but the real person brought it up because of Jazzy Jay. So my example for early on to demonstrate how his power worked was that every single day when he got in the car to drive to work, he would tune into one of 30 different radio stations.
Okay.
Because you can only, often on radio shows, you can only win a prize from a radio show once a month. So he would have 30, and on, like, as he would pass the time, he would dial in. Of course, he would always get through.
Of course.
And whatever the game was, he would always win. So he'd always just win something on the way to work.
Caller 9.
Yeah, so the radio show he was listening to that day was Jazzy J, and the game was that he would have a word that was really obscure, and he would provide you with two definitions to the word, and you had to say which was the correct one.
Okay.
And Carl would have this internal dilemma of wondering whether he would guess correctly the word or if he could, in a way, choose the meaning of the word because...
Oh, fascinating.
Right, because matter what, he's going to get it right.
Because he's going to win. So it's like, even if he knew the perceived wrong answer, it would be right, and therefore his answer is right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So that was Jazzy J's game, which of course he wins.
Jazzy
and then he
J.
wins concert tickets, who... The girl at the office is a fan of it, and that's how he asks her out, because she's like, I heard you on the radio. See how it all works together? It's amazing.
I really don't think that creative writing was your bag.
This was. You think, no, give it up?
No, I think that was amazing. I loved it so much. Goodness me, the amount of lore, Jazzy J.
I know.
The 30-day rule, that's amazing. And there's 30 radio stations. He must live in a highly metropolitan area.
Yeah, he lived in like a metropolitan area where you'd have way more than 30 stations to choose from.
Right, right.
So he'd have to choose. But, he was pretty happy. Because he was like, ooh, because he listens to a different radio station every day, so he doesn't like all of them. But he liked Jazzy J. He was like, ooh, this is a good one. Fun.
So, did you ever think that your role, you the writer, like that was your cameo, like you were Jazzy J?
No, I didn't think of it. I didn't think of myself as being Jazzy J at all. I didn't even think. I thought of him as being a black guy. Honestly, I don't know why, but he didn't really have much of an in-book presence.
Well, he does though.
Now he does. Now
surely he does.
Now apparently, now I've adopted the moniker.
Yeah, you have.
As the host of this show, as to be determined by Patreon. We should say it's just patreon.com/popcornculture.
I believe so. It's going to be in the show
notes.
We should
mention that.
We should mention that's how you can get to it. Yeah, it'll be in the show notes no matter what.
Yeah.
But that is super fascinating. You have told me bits and pieces about Carl before.
Mm.
I don't know that you've ever delivered me that much of the narrative.
Well,
has it expounded? Is that a word?
So I remember writing it in class, and you had to write like 5 pages or whatever, and that was like what it was. And then this was always the daunting part of creative writing classes, is that you have to give it to the rest of the class to read, and then you'll like sit in circles and critique it with each other.
Ooh.
Of course, you'll critique other people's as well, but that was always the scary part. So like, I got into a part in the story where I didn't quite know like where to go next, and it wasn't like I was gonna have to finish it, so I was like, but I don't know, people liked the premise. They thought it was, I guess, fun.
No, I think it's a super fun premise. It's an incredibly interesting thought to imagine, because with those things, you know, it's like when you do win a radio contest, it is like the most exciting thing.
But
like,
not for Carl.
But not for Carl. Not for Carl. Because he always wins.
He's just passing the time.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So I think what I was suffering from was trying to work in as many examples of like why this would be a bad thing for him. Like that unlucky things would happen to people around him because he was around.
Okay.
And like, I was trying to work all that into a very short amount of time. And I've heard this before, or like specifically like because we talk about Harry Potter a lot, that the hardest chapter for her, for like J.K. Rowling to write was the first chapter. She rewrote it like 50 times.
Right.
Because it's hard to not cram in the whole story into the first chapter.
It's so hard. Yeah. Because my fear, I think, as someone who would like aspire to write a book,
mm-hmm.
would be the idea of the like your retention rate, like on YouTube, like
yeah.
how long does somebody stay on your video?
Right.
It's almost like if I bury the really interesting bits of the book too far into the back, what if nobody ever gets there?
Right. Exactly.
Like, what if they put the book down and decide it wasn't worth it? And it's like, no, the twist at the end is amazing.
Exactly. Oh, so you want them? yeah.
You have to have patience as a writer.
Yeah, that's, ooh, patience as a writer. Man, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Man, well.
So that you can get there. So, interestingly, I'm going to tell a story.
You're going to tell a story?
Yeah, I'm going to tell a serious story because it goes back to, actually, interestingly, a writing class of mine.
Yeah.
And probably like one of the worst experiences of my entire life. You know what this story is.
Okay, this isn't like a college story.
This was my very first class when I got to Radford University where I went to school.
Do I know this story?
Yeah, I don't. You will know the story that I'm going to tell. You don't know the lead up bit to it, but
okay. You
prompted me, and I've debated on talking about this on the pop before because it's like one of like the Ben Carlin low moments of my life.
Oh no!
Thanks. You know what I'm going to talk about?
I think so.
Okay. So, interestingly, my very first class that I ever took was a writing class, and it was like my 9 a.m. class on my first day. And they gave you like this prompt to talk about like something. I forget exactly what the prompt was, but it was like you were supposed to like try to like put as like much emotion into a piece as you could.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day or whatever, the Friday after the Monday it was due, he sits down and then he immediately asks you to take your piece of paper and hand it to the person at the desk next to you.
Oh.
And then they were going to read your paper.
Oh, great.
Mine was about the time I had to go to jail.
Oh, I do not. This is not the story I thought you were going to tell, but I am familiar with this.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Man.
I know. And this was like one of those things where it was like, it happened so shortly before I went to college
right. That
it was like just this thing that was like so weighing heavily on my mind. And it was like, I had like such a I don't know, traumatic experience would be overstating it, but like such a experience with it that this was a strange moment in my life where I had never really regarded myself as a particularly good writer, but like my professor literally asked me to like come and talk to him in his office because he thought that it was like such a good piece of writing.
Oh,
and
because I mean, this is such a like a probably a very raw story.
It was.
Yeah,
yeah it was for sure. And so yeah, the story going back, we in high school were not exactly your classic party type of people.
Well, I'll just preface this and just like, so people don't get the wrong idea. This is not like a severe act of criminal behavior or something.
This is like a weird,
hilarious, almost comical at this point story. Despite the sad part is that you ended up in just a bad spot.
In a bad spot, yeah. And that's the thing. Yeah, this was not like a like absurd reckless. Yeah, like Jay said, it wasn't like absurd criminal behavior. It was just wrong place, wrong time. Really, kind of like a tough Forest Service gentleman as a setup to it. But so in high school, we're not like your classic, like go to a party when parents are out of town type of thing. But what we would do most frequently is go camping.
Right.
Like I would say that there were summer months in our high school years, especially towards the end of our high school years, where literally doing no other wrong behavior other than maybe being like in a place in the woods that like we didn't own.
Sure.
We weren't really doing anything wrong. We were just going camping, probably more nights of the summer than we were like just at home.
I suppose. Yeah. I mean, I think this was like our way of just, I don't know, not rebellion's probably the wrong word, but just our way of hanging out with our friends
yes. All
the time. But we were like interested in going camping for the sake of camping largely.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I think growing up, that was like something like when we knew had a camping trip coming up, that was like the thing. Like I was so excited to go camping. So then I think as I got older, it was just like, now I can go on my own. I'm going to do it all the time.
Going camping.
Because that's what Ben Carlin does is usually once I figure out I like something, it's like, how do I make sure I can always do it?
Yeah.
But so anyway, in high school, I had this Isuzu Trooper,
which
I named Sue.
Yeah. Isuzu.
Yeah.
Hey, right.
I was really clever. I should have also been in more creative writing classes, apparently.
Like we had a, that's how like everyone's car was sort of a pun on the brand it was.
Was it?
Was it? Because Tyler had like Ronda the Honda.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Right. And we had one of our friends had like a Jeep Liberty and it was like Bert.
It was Bert because Liberty.
Liberty.
And then, we had another friend. He drove, I think it was just a Neo.
Right. It was a Dodge Neon.
It was a Dodge Neon.
We called it Neo.
Okay, I was like, Is that a car? A Neo? That doesn't sound right. It was a Dodge Neon, and we called it Neo. So yeah, this was a thing.
This was a thing. But so I had the one, and this was like a completely stock car. This was like a car that our dad had bought new, and then like by the time I could drive, it was like 12 years old or something. So it was like, it was my hand-me-down, my first car. And we found out pretty quickly that it could pretty much go anywhere.
Hey, I think in our minds, like, this car has four-wheel drive. That means it's invincible, and we can use and should use four-wheel drive.
As much as humanly possible. Yeah.
Whereas most, I think, floor model four-wheel drives are typically for, hey, you're in a bad situation. Good news, we've got four-wheel drive.
Right, right.
But in our minds, it was like, four-wheel drive, let's take this thing off-roading.
Oh.
Which is not the intended use.
Not the intended use, but exactly how we used it.
Yep.
And it was the type of thing where, like, I remember so many kids we went to high school with in, like, you know, Southwest Virginia had, like, lifted Jeeps and stuff like that.
There's always those kids with the rich parents who just, you're like, man, now your car is suited for off-roading.
Right, and yet they would probably never use it anywhere nearly as aggressively as I used mine.
Exactly. But right. Like, whatever.
Right, so... But the one thing that I know that it did have is these skid plates, so that like if you were to like hit a rock, it was like, you know, like heavy gauge steel, so that you weren't like, you know, like mess up the bottom of the car.
Tough steel.
We used it. There were so many dents in it. It was like there were probably times where we got like air, you know, and like landed on a rock that was pointed up at exactly the wrong spot.
Oh man.
Yeah, yeah.
We should post a picture of you and Sue on the Patreon.
Oh, we should. We should. That's where it'll be.
This is the kind of stuff we can put. See, this is the other thing, is we need a place to put all the stuff we talk about.
For sure.
That people can go see pictures or examples or whatever.
As a steady feed.
So that, in addition to choosing the host, if you choose to support us on Patreon, you will get access to the like, exclusive Patreon feed where we can just post the stuff and you can see it more clearly.
Spectacular plug. Yeah, be sure to vote for Buzzy B.
Yeah, yeah, but that... don't. But actually, Jazzy J.
Oh my God. Good plug. So anyway, we were out camping once upon a time, and it was like the week before my high school graduation. So basically at this point in time, I'm like, I'm done with exams. I'm pretty much just coasting, like, you know, into the summer. This would be like the first summer of like my teenage life where I'm not going to have like cross country practice single day through the whole summer.
Wow.
It's like freedom is so close. I can like taste it. I'm like, I know where I'm going to school. I've already got my roommates lined up. Like everything about it. Like I'm peak confidence.
Yeah. Oh, everything. You know how that goes on this show.
Oh, you know exactly. Your fly's down immediately.
Yeah.
And let me tell you guys, my fly was down.
I mean, you might not have even been wearing pants.
So basically, we're getting ready to leave in the morning. And from the camping trip.
In the woods.
In a national park. You're actually not there for this
trip. I wasn't here, but I've heard it.
Yeah, you've heard it.
I want to make sure people understand.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, set the scene.
Set the scene.
Yeah. So... we're going through, we're cleaning up all this stuff. The high school version of me and my friends, at least the group of guys I was with, there was alcohol there, but I can tell you that I was not drinking.
Mm-hmm.
But the getting ready to leave as we're packing up, there was definitely this air of like, we're underage kids and we're getting ready to leave. And nobody really wants to like have the alcohol be in their car.
Right.
And so we literally flipped a coin. And it was just sort of like, it was either going in my friend's Xterra or it was going in my car.
Right.
And so we load everything up. We put it in there. We just sort of like shove it under some sleeping bags in the back or whatever. And it's like, well, whatever. We'll just get out of here. And as we're going to leave, our friend Mike climbs on top of Sue, which was like more than it should have been, a semi-common practice when we were off-roading.
Now, he climbed on top, not you're about to leave and he's on top, you're moving.
No, I mean, I think he would have climbed on top before the car started moving.
But remained on top
of the car. So it would be like being in somebody's truck bed, except instead of being in a truck bed, it was just like holding on to my ski rack.
Yeah.
Up on top.
On the roof. As you drive through the woods. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is not like a public road.
Right.
So to speak. As we're going out, we're honestly going like a pretty steady crawl. No big deal. And off to the left is this like big SUV that's kind of like parked in like an offshoot thing. And we sort of go by, actually wave at it because I'm just sort of like, hey, good morning. It's Sunday. You know, we just got up. We're all camping. We had a, you know, good time. Well, this gentleman.
Park ranger.
He immediately, of course, sees my friend Mike on top of the car and comes like, you know, running after us, physically right. running, not like, you know, in his vehicle.
Right.
And flagging us down. So, of course, I stop and Mike immediately like shoots in to the side window and we're like, oh, boy. Oh, boy. Here we go. And so the guy comes over and I'm like everything I've ever been taught is to just be as polite as humanly possible to in any circumstances where you've ever been pulled over. It's right. just like, do not be argumentative. Like they have total cause for this situation. Yes, sir. No, sir. Like all the stuff.
Right.
And also let me set the scene a little bit here because it doesn't look great. But my car, I had actually gone through and like gutted the stereo out of it to put it into a different vehicle. So as you walk up to this like old rickety Isuzu Trooper that like probably has steam slightly coming out from underneath the hood from, you know, overheating or whatever
sure.
might have been the case. I mean, it had a myriad of problems. Also in the middle of my dashboard is just like an open socket where the stereo used to be. But on top of that, I had like a Bluetooth speaker that was plugged into an iPod that was then plugged into an AC adapter and then like, you know, plugged in with a plug.
So you took out the actual speakers and then jerry-rigged new ones.
Yes.
So you did. So you weren't left completely musicless.
Musicless, exactly.
You could still tune into Jazzy J.
Jazzy J. Maybe, if it had a radio
yeah,
pickup.
I guess maybe not. Probably not in these woods.
I think it was literally
maybe
like
you downloaded his podcast and were listening to it.
That's it. Because Jazzy J had a podcast exactly. back in 2008. So it doesn't look super good. It had this like super long hair at the time. Like I have to imagine what this park ranger was seeing versus the way that I saw myself looking out of it, where it was like
right.
largely I pretty much saw myself as nothing more than a pretty careless kid.
Right.
You know, not like some hooligan who was like hoodwinking anything or anybody.
Right.
But there we were. And so he immediately gives me a ticket for reckless driving, for having somebody riding on top of my vehicle. And on top of that, he's like, okay, so do you guys have any like drugs or alcohol on you? And I was like, well, yeah, I have alcohol in the back. Just like, I just told him,
yeah,
you know, straight up. So he goes back there. He starts pulling all of our stuff out. Like, you know how our old red sleeping bags, like were these like really slippery, like nylon material.
Yeah.
You were, like would like shoestring tie them like after you rolled them up.
Yes.
Okay. Well, if you grab the middle of it, it like unfolds like a bad cinnamon roll.
Oh yeah, I know what you mean.
So they're right. like they're like spooled up nice in the back, and he goes and like grabs right in the middle of both of them and just like unspools our sleeping bags onto the ground. And then of course finds the alcohol. So he comes over and he's like, okay, so I'll give you guys the option because those are two cars. He's like, either all like nine of you can get a possession charge or one of you can just like take it for everyone else.
Mm.
And for whatever reason in my mind, I was like, well, I was already in trouble. I'll take it. Just, you know, just like give me the charge and I'll say that they were mine. And so no one else gets in any trouble at all.
Mm.
And I roll away from the situation with an alcohol possession charge,
which
I didn't drink and a reckless driving ticket. And so fortunately, this has always been the thing that I felt like was my huge saving grace in this situation, is that I didn't get like arrested.
Because
that's true. I think that like if they had put me in handcuffs, I would have started crying.
Oh,
like
no doubt.
Legitimate. I would have not held it together in any way, shape or form. So anyway, ultimately I went to like my high school graduation the next week, where they're talking about how like your future is so bright and we're all so proud of you. And
wow.
I'm sitting there like,
Not my future.
the worst. So
wow.
Ultimately a couple weeks after that, I have to go to court. They tell me that I have to go and spend a weekend in jail, which I, then I did cry.
Oh my gosh.
And actually, I think
what severe punishment.
I know. The other thing is too, you know, like senior week, like after high school, you would go to senior week and it's like where a whole bunch of high school students go down and spend a week at the beach. I didn't even go to that. Like, I made a deal with mom and dad if they would take me snorkeling so I could try to collect like marine fish in the Florida Keys that I would not go to senior week. And there I am, like the only person out of anyone I know who has gotten in this much trouble. And
oh, man.
It was just the worst. So
it's so, yeah, because you like amongst, you're like trying to make all these like safer decisions that are like way more straight edge and way more law abiding, like have this nice, like you're giving up your senior beach week to go on a family trip. Like not you and your friends are going to go to the Florida Keys.
Yeah. Mom and dad drove the minivan with my
from
two
Virginia
brothers. Yeah.
To the Florida Keys, which if you don't know, that means all the way to the end of Florida and then a little more.
Yeah. Yeah. Florida's a long state.
Florida's a long state. And the Florida Keys, like if you want to see mile zero, this is where the interstate starts. That's where it is.
That's where
it's
it is.
In the Keys.
We went there. Yeah. So that was my grand adventure. And yeah. then after that, I had to go home and go to jail for a weekend.
Yeah. I'm sure it was so easy to enjoy. So wait, then what I remember mostly about the Keys was that we all got horrible sunburns.
The worst sunburn.
Yeah,
because
we
snorkeled the whole time.
Yeah.
Like the whole time we were down there. So our backs were just like facing the sky for
right.
like 5 days.
That's the thing about snorkeling. Half your body is just right above the water.
Yeah. 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 So chronic sunburn.
Yeah, real bad.
Real bad. Real bad. But yeah, so I get back and I have to go and get checked in. And sure enough, like as I'm getting checked in, the guard is one of my like customers, my frequent customers at my aquarium store that I own. So I was like, hey, and they felt so bad for me. I could tell. It was just like, I think they could see just the pure fear on my face. Mm. So they check me into like my, so if you're there like for 48 hours, they never actually put you into like Gen Pop, air quotes. I don't even know if that's what it's called. But I was in a cell by myself the whole time.
I think Gen Pop, general population, is like a prison thing.
Okay, so definitely was never headed there. Not even close.
Not even close.
They never put me in the community room. The caterpillar room.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I get in there though, and I think it's like, you know, I'm getting checked in at like 7 o'clock. By the time we get through all this stuff, it's like 9 o'clock, and they're like, okay, lights will be out like at 11. So I go in and I'm like, okay, like I'm just going to try to like wear myself out. So I just do like push-ups and sit-ups, and like I throw toilet paper, like, you know, like the roll of toilet paper, like at the ceiling, just over and over catching it.
Yeah.
Trying to do all this stuff. And I'm like, man, how has it not been 2 hours?
Yeah.
Like the lights are still not off. And I'm like, I don't know what is going on. It's like,
I'm going to be here forever.
Forever. I'm
for
like,
actual
if it hasn't been 2 hours yet, I am screwed. And
you might still be there.
I know, I might still be there. And so I'm just like, I'm thinking and I'm waiting and I'm pacing and I'm trying to do all this stuff and the lights never go off. And then finally someone comes over. They're like, we're so sorry, the light didn't go off. There's like no clock obviously in there. So they're like, yeah,
why obviously? Why isn't there a clock?
I don't know.
It
a clock would
like
be
there should be.
A clock would be so nice.
Something to stare at.
I'm not gonna it would be like a video game having a clock. It's like, yeah. Wow, look at the action on that thing.
Or maybe it would be torture though. You'd be like, has it been 5 minutes yet? Oh God, it hasn't.
It hasn't. When was the last time I looked?
Yeah, that would be the game. How long could I go without looking?
Yeah, that's exactly what it would be. And so they finally take me out where there is a clock and it's 4 a.m.
Mm.
And so the good news was it had been much longer than I had thought. The bad news was I had literally just been pacing around and doing push-ups until 4 a.m.
Just you didn't sleep.
I could not
sleep.
The lights
were on.
The lights were on. The whole time I was there, I think I slept for a grand total of 4 hours. I did read 2 entire books end to end. So that was good. I gave the guard some advice on their convict cichlids.
Convict cichlids?
Convict cichlids.
How appropriate.
I did not even realize it until I'm telling this story that's what they had. You think it was a joke? Do you think she was screwing with me?
It might have been.
I have literally never thought about that. That's a truth. That's a real fish, a convict cichlid.
They're mean.
They're mean. Yeah, South American. But wow, I hope they weren't.
Oh, that'd be so funny if they were.
If that's what it was the whole time.
Was. I mean, did you know them to have cichlids? Because you owned a saltwater aquarium store, and that would be freshwater. Am I right?
No, we did have some freshwater stuff, just not much. And we sold supplies as well, so they would have been able to come in. But yeah, no, that's... Oh my God, I never thought about that. Hopefully that's not it.
So if you had not taken the blame and he had instead spread it amongst the nine of you, would all of you had to go to jail, or would it have been a lesser charge for the nine of you?
That's the thing, is that it was super not clear based on what happened, whether or not the jail portion of my, what is the right word there? Is it sentencing?
Sentence, yeah.
Okay. I'm not actually sure if that was connected to the driving portion of it or the possession of alcohol portion of it or both. Like if it was kind of like any one of those, it would have just been like community service and a year's probation. But having both of them, it was like, okay.
This guy's trouble.
I know. And like, I go to this courtroom and quite literally it was like out in the middle of nowhere because we're like on this old forest road.
Right.
And so I'm wearing like a button down Abercrombie shirt, and I was the nicest person. I was the nicest dressed person in the whole room.
Right.
It's like, I feel like I don't know. I had a lawyer. Like, I don't know if there's anything else that I could have done throughout this entire situation to have made it any better. And I got like the absolute maximum negativity.
Wow.
I know.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
I know. Anyway, so long story short, be careful, make good decisions.
Yeah.
Be smart.
Don't ride on the top of your friend's Isuzu.
Please don't do that. Please don't do that.
Yeah. Or if you have someone doing that to you, maybe tell them to get down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Wow.
So anyway, I thought both of these stories would play rather nicely as we connected the eventual topic of the pop to the coronavirus that is sweeping the planet, because I was in isolation,
absolutely. Yes, except for two whole days,
and now the worst,
and now we're being forced into isolation. Forced by the virus. Flatten that curve, as it were. Yeah, so as people are listening to this, it's Monday as we're recording it, so
right,
who's to say what's happened between now and Friday? But a week ago, last Monday, I would have said this wasn't a very big deal.
It truly, and at that point in time, it seemed like the consensus of people whose opinions I would tend to follow were suggesting that it was being a bit blown out of proportion.
Yeah.
Before. And it seemed like maybe Thursday night, there was the report that came out that like Tom Hanks and his wife have it, and that the NBA canceled their season. And it seemed like the next morning, the world shut down.
Yeah, just last week was this whirlwind of event after event getting canceled, of people being sent home from schools, of people staying home from work. And yeah, just the social distancing just slammed down last Friday.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is such a weird time to be alive. Beth and I were discussing this before, like wondering, is this like a world event akin to like a 9/11 kind of situation? Like, not obviously it's not like a terrorist attack or anything.
Sure.
But is this the sort of thing that'll be in history books, do you think?
It feels like it. I mean, I suppose maybe some of the fallout to come is still maybe would determine whether or not that ends up being the case. It's a strange thing, because I do feel like there's a significant amount of like almost world cooperation.
That is, yeah, it's reminding me a lot of Mark Watney getting stuck on Mars.
Yeah, you know? I have also thought about that. So that's from the book or movie The Martian, where there's sort of this whole idea that like one person is found alive on Mars, and it's kind of like, technically we can save that one person.
Yeah.
But like, how many people are going to have to put in how much work and how many, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in order to make it possible to do that?
They need international cooperation from these people, this country's space station and this country's space station.
Like, you know, and I think in the book, like the Chinese have their own rocket that they've developed for whatever, you know, purpose. And like, they literally give up all of the years of research that went into using or to developing that rocket in order to go and like help this single cause.
So it is interesting to see like this like whole like world unity coming together over the coronavirus. Of course, world unity means staying away from everybody.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah, it's like, that's how we do it best in this century. But yeah. Okay, so coronavirus, social distancing. Is there anything that like where you see it as like a little bit of an opportunity for yourself, like at home, where if you're like, I'm going to be stuck here, how do you use that time? Is there like a new skill you would try to learn? Is there a project you would try to finally finish? What would you do?
This is going to sound really weird, but I keep having this frustration with the quarantine obviously don't wish this was happening at all.
Right.
But like, this is the kind of thing, like, if I was in high school right now, I can tell you, I'd be like, this is awesome.
Oh, like, because you'd like be out of school
for
2 weeks.
Yeah, because you'd be out of school for 2 or 3 weeks or something with like nothing to do. And I'm like, in the meantime, I'm over here, and as an adult, it's like, I feel like this frustration that I can't, this sounds so weird, like, I can't enjoy the quarantine by, like, working on something or be productive or something.
Right.
Because in the meantime, I still have 2 twins in the NICU. We still have to take care of Luke and all that. So, like, being at home still just means mostly taking care of Luke. And the thing that's really more dangerous, or not, I mean, yeah, I guess dangerous, but that is more concerning specifically to me about the coronavirus is that we have the twins in the NICU still.
Right.
And it's, I guess it sounds like what it attacks is like respiratory stuff, like
right.
If you get it. So the main thing with premature babies is that they're like largely developing their lungs still.
Right.
Like that's like the last thing they develop in the womb. So that's the thing that they're still working on, which means they're like, you know, the worst people who could get it.
Right.
So, but then you go back and forth and you're like, oh man, but at least they're at the hospital and they're like stopping. But then you're like, but then they're at the hospital. So if they're sick people, like that's where, you know.
Right. Yeah. It's like your brain is doing this like tennis match of like.
Exactly.
It's like, well, that's good, but that's bad. So that's good.
Yeah. They have security measures. And it's like, when people are getting through, I got through. I don't know. You know. But I will say if you go into the hospital right now, they've started limiting it to 1 guest per patient, which is not 1 guest at a time per patient. It is, if you are at the hospital, you are allowed 1 specific guest.
Oh, wow.
Right. So, you know, if you're there for another 2 weeks or something and, you know, your mom is your specific guest, she is the only one who can come visit you.
So is it the case that like Nick and Nate have you and Beth respectively?
So I was like, I was sort of laughing and I was like, well, the good news is we have twins. So if they try and pull that on us, we're going to be like, you'll be for Nate and I'll be for Nick. And, you know, but for NICU, it's the specification is only parents.
Okay. Yeah. That's good. That's good.
So that's good. So we've been able to go. So we went over this weekend a couple of times, saw them. That was great. I got to hold both of them at the same time for the first time.
Hey, howdy. Hey, how was that? Was it crazy?
It was. It was like, it's fairly magical. You're like, oh my God. Because what's cool, I mean, they haven't even had much contact with each other.
Right.
You know, at all. So it's pretty cool. I don't know, but I like to think there's like an intangible connection between them and that they do recognize each other, even though they're largely unaware of everything.
Yeah, no, I can see that though. I mean, they have spent basically their entire existence in immediate proximity with one another.
I know.
So it feels like kind of going back to that like resonance frequency. It seems like that they must just have like.
They must have some recognition because that to me is the most heartbreaking thing is that they've been together the whole time and immediately the very first thing that happens as soon as they're born is they're separated.
Right.
Like, the only thing they know is taken away from them. And that makes me sad. But, you know, then you have this, tennis match. Like, they don't even know. They're just, you know, they're unaware of everything.
The poor little dudes.
The poor little things. But you're like, no. But then I think about, like, Luke, my son. He picks up on so much stuff, even when you don't think he's paying attention.
Right.
All of a sudden, like, his comprehension level feels very high. Like, I can tell him stuff, and he can go do it, and he'll understand it. He can't always tell me everything, but I know he understands a lot more than he can verbalize back to me.
Right, which is crazy.
Yeah, so I was like, I don't even know. Sometimes it'll be stuff you're not even, you know, it'll be from weeks ago. You haven't said it in a while, and all of a sudden he'll be like, yeah, I got this. Or you don't even think he's picking, like, we have a this, like, hardback book, like one of those baby books.
Right.
That Beth made where she put pictures of all of our different family members through it. So like one page is me and Beth and Luke and one page is you and Alice and one page is Tyler and Emily and Olivia. But so at the very back of it, the last couple pages are our grandparents who Luke has met 2 or 3 times and certainly not since he was 2.
Sure.
Or anything. But we'll still flip through the page and be like, oh, look, that's Grandma Jane and that's Grandpa Len. And, you know, not since he's not exposed to them on any sort of daily basis or at all.
Right.
They live very far away. I don't really expect him to know them or recognize them. But we flipped it over to a page the other day and he's just like, Grandma Jane? And I was like, what?
You know?
Like, not only do you recognize her, but you know her name. But it's
right.
Like, that is impressive.
That is. That's super impressive.
Yeah.
Well, That's interesting, though, because one of the things I've always thought about is, like, super cliche phrases.
Yeah.
Like, it's not you, it's me. It's like, I feel like that's one of those cliche phrases that, like, I knew it was a cliche the very first time I ever heard it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the, I think back about this when I was a little kid. I think even as a little kid, I thought about this.
Right.
But it was like, when did I hear between the ages of like 1 and 5 years old, this phrase mm-hmm. so commonly that like by the time that like I am comprehending the context of the sentence, that I already know at that point in time that it's a cliche. Hmm. Like, is that like part of an inflection-based delivery where
I
it's
think
like,
it's like context clues. Like, you can just sort of tell.
Right. Yeah. But it's like I never at any point in time remember not remembering or not knowing. Like, I don't remember learning it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting to me to hear that he's like comprehending all this stuff because he's probably still right on that verge of like not going to have memories of the things that are happening now.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting to me to think like, what does that mean in terms of like, is there a possibility that he could be like being exposed to these types of cliche phrases?
Right.
And he knows they're cliches because he's heard them in a way,
in
like,
a way, yeah,
right.
You're unaware that he's right. picking up on.
Right.
This is a thing I do all the time. I'll like talk to him and he'll say something or he'll do something and then I'll want to tell Beth about it. And I'll just like turn to her and be like, oh, he just did this whole thing. And I'm like, as if he can't hear me talking to her now about him.
Oh, right.
You know,
right,
and I'm
right,
like,
yeah.
But certainly he must still be paying attention. Oh, okay. So this is a thing. I wonder if you have any phrases like this that have permeated as so true in your brain, you don't know, like, sometimes, like, oh, it's not you, it's me, or something. You know, that's a phrase where, it basically is just, like, a breakup phrase.
Right.
But, like, so it's so cliche, but, like, are there times it is true, or does it always, anyway, let me give you my example.
Okay.
My example is,
like, is it okay for the cliche to be true? Is that,
right.
is that
yes.
your question?
Is it okay for the cliche to be true, or are some of these things, or is it just not true sometimes? So, one of these little rules of sayings like this that I heard that I feel like has infected my brain very deeply is, anything you say before the word but doesn't count.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And if you start, I'm sorry I've even said this on the podcast, because if you haven't, if you haven't heard that before and you internalize it, now it's really going to stand out. This is something I can't not hear it anymore.
Sure.
And it is when I hear other people talk. So this happens a lot, especially if you're like watching a lot of like a reality TV, like, if something's on The Bachelor.
It does. I was going to say, yeah. Just get there. It's The Bachelor.
It happens on The Bachelor all the time where they'll be talking to someone and they're like, oh, you're such a great person and I really connected with you. But, and it's like, yeah, everything before that didn't count, you know?
It's like, yeah. And I hate those type of like build up moments. I do think that's a thing that I like learned growing up in relationships and stuff, like where I feel like I realized when those moments were happening. And I think even myself, like when, if I knew I was going to have to go and like deliver, you know, bad news or, you know, break it off with somebody, mm-hmm. it was like, I'm not going to start with this big, long, drawn out. Like,
yeah.
these are all the good things about you, because it's not going to soften the blow at all.
Right.
Go ahead.
So, but that's the thing is, does it? Like, in my mind, everyone just knows this. And so saying it is just rude, you know, to say all the stuff ahead of time and then say, but is just like, yeah, but we all know that everything you said before, but doesn't count. So that was just like, it's just like ridiculous. Like, why even bother?
Well, I don't know that it doesn't count, because it's like, I think that you can mean the things that you say before mm-hmm. you get to the, but like you can like truly say like, we had like such a great connection and like all this stuff. And especially on The Bachelor, you know, like where they're forced to break up with a bunch of people.
Yeah,
it's like,
I have to say
it's fairly inevitable anyway. They could really like somebody and be like, well, but I still have to pick this other person.
But
I don't think everything before that but doesn't count. I still think that's part of my point.
Yeah.
Maybe? I don't know. Where am I going with this? Come on, brain. Get back on
track. Get back on track.
So I think that you can mean all of the stuff that you say leading up to it, but the overall implications of everything that's going to come away from that conversation is what comes after the but. So
right.
if there is a but somewhere in there, then everything else that really matters in the way that you're going to be impacted by the conversation is going to exist post but,
mm-hmm.
not pre but.
Right.
And so it's those are the types of things where probably with time, the pre-butt information can ultimately like mean a lot more to you.
Oh, that's like something to hold on to.
Yeah, it can be something to hold on to. Or I think it could even be like if you're going through the process of breaking up with somebody and you are talking about like their strengths in a relationship, but there are these reasons why it's not going to work out. Like that type of information can still be true and they can still be something that like the person who is being broken up with may or may not, you know, digest and take away with them.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like, you know, hey, like you're so good at these things and you're so thoughtful and like I really appreciate how you remember my birthday.
So you think it is still an effective way to communicate something, to say things, but other things.
I think that it can be. I mean, it probably depends largely a lot on the person who is talking and to what extent they are able to compartmentalize the two ideas, which is attempting to leave the person with all of these positive thoughts that you have like thought out, versus the ultimate intention of the conversation. And I say that because like, if you're going into a conversation in order I'm using break up with somebody. I don't know that it has to be that. But if you're going in a conversation to break up with somebody, it's hard for that not to be like the big speech bubble inside of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the one that's taken up all the space.
Right.
So what is your ability inside of your headspace to have two speech bubbles and be like, make sure you have all like the proper departing words and the good stuff and the things you so appreciated about that person, and then also make sure then to transition into the actual objective of the conversation. Mm. Because I do think in order for it to be successful, those two things need to be effectively compartmentalized. You have to execute two separate portions of communication inside of one conversation.
Well, you do.
And it's split by the butt.
Yeah. I think
the butt crack, if you will.
That's the point of conversation. The crack between
the crack between is the butt.
Is the butt. Oh my gosh, between positive and negative there's a crack and it's the word butt. My problem is that I treat this rule as so definite in my brain that when I'm trying to communicate information like this that needs a
a butt crack.
It needs a butt crack. People are not going to keep listening. That I think even though maybe it's an effective form of communication, my brain will try and come up with 1,000 other ways to present the information so that I don't have to use the word but, because I'm like, if I say but, all this stuff I do mean isn't going to count anymore. And they're going to know that. Like, it's, you know.
Interesting. Like, you almost take it so seriously.
Yeah.
That it chicken arms you a little bit. Like,
yeah.
Like, it holds one arm behind your back as you're attempting to communicate the idea. I don't think you should let that happen.
Right. I can butt crack people.
Yeah, you can. You can butt crack people.
Oh, God. We got to rephrase that.
No, I think it lives on forever.
People, I'm losing all my host J votes.
Oh, that's good. That's good. That's good.
Or is it?
What was my name? Buzzy B?
Buzzy B and Jazzy J.
Buzzy B. Oh man, that's interesting. So how frequently do you feel like this comes up? Like, are you regularly having to have such a split speech bubble kind of communication where you're trying to communicate both like positive and...
I think it comes up if ever someone says something and I want to, that I disagree with, like, oh, this is like, if someone has an idea or just like, oh, we should go do this instead or something. It's like, I have a reason I don't want to. I don't want to be like, no, that's a good idea. But, or, you know, I don't know. I find like I don't have good ways of communicating my disagreement about things.
Oh, sure. Sure. No, I know what you mean. And that this has been like a very recent discovery of mine is that I think more than I maybe ever realized, I have like a big time people pleaser attitude.
Who, you?
You knew this
Ben
about
Garland?
Me. It's so funny how things can be so obvious to people on the outside, but to you, it's not.
Right,
But yeah. This has like been the most recent way that I've been able to articulate, because I've had this situation recently where I have had a small handful of interactions where somebody has asked me a question where there is no good way for me to answer it. Like, I either have to either come across as potentially a bit abrupt or else rude, or I have to agree to whatever they're saying and then endure
right.
what follows.
Either you have to do something you don't want to do, or you have to be mean to them.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So
because
it's like,
they asked you an uncomfortable question.
Right. It's like you've put me into a no-win situation here where there's like there's nothing good I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found that probably for most of my life, I have responded to this where if somebody just asked me a question where I was in this position, almost always what I was just doing was just agreeing to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just be like, well, I'm just going to have to figure out how to deal with this later.
Right.
Because they asked me and I didn't want to say no, even though I really wanted to say no. But like,
right.
I think in a large sense, usually what I felt is that the pain of me having to endure whatever's about to come isn't as bad as my sense of making somebody feel bad by saying no.
Right. Like you'd rather endure the thing than feel guilty.
Exactly.
About saying no.
Exactly. Yeah, but it really is like a no-win situation in my mind.
Yeah, and it just depends on what the thing is. I mean, if it's helping a friend with a favor, that's one thing, and it's, you know, maybe it's uncomfortable for you, but whatever, now they owe you a favor. And
right.
You were a nice guy. You didn't want to help them, but you did.
Right.
The problem is when it leaks over into like a more, I don't know, dangerous situation, or that's probably the wrong word.
Yeah, dangerous feels a bit aggressive. I think I can just tell the story that I'm thinking of. And apologies if you are this person who's listening at home. It is certainly not personal, but we had a moment happen recently where we were getting ready to walk out of the office to go to lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we work in a pretty small area, part of the world. We don't really get recognized for being on YouTube almost ever.
Right.
It's I would say that like it's maybe once a month someone would be like, hey, are you from the Super Carlin Brothers? So it's not a very common thing to have happen, and therefore we don't really have that many constructs up in order to deal with moments where maybe an inappropriate situation has arisen.
Mm-hmm.
And so one day we were walking out of our office and someone like yelled my name, and I turned around and they jog up to me and I have no idea who this person was.
Right.
And they were like, hey, I watch your YouTube channel all the time. And, you know, like they were being like super friendly, doing all this stuff, asked to take a picture. And they're like, what are you guys up to? And we were like, oh, we're like going downtown to grab some lunch. And they were like, can I come? And I was like,
And now you're in people pleaser mode.
And now I'm in people pleaser mode. So like my mind literally goes into the situation of like my genuine reaction to that is like, that doesn't feel very appropriate.
Right.
And I think that like part of the problem is that the ball was already rolling in a generally positive way.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was kind of like, hey, how are you? Nice to meet you. Thank you for watching the channel. Like all the stuff. We took a picture, all the, you know, all these things. And then it's like the last thing you want to do is pop their balloon.
Right.
And like leave them in that situation. But I also feel like it's like I you put me in a position where I either have to do that or I have to let you come to lunch with us.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been like the most recent one where it was like, oh my gosh, like I don't know what to do here.
Right.
So does that ever happen to you, or would you have just said no?
The only thing that has ever happened to me like that was when I had to switch over my Instagram account or like activated as a business account or something.
Okay.
And when I did that, I guess if you're like a business like that is less public figure based, it is more like you sell stuff based and you have a store location or something.
Right.
Like what it'll do is one of the things that Instagram will then allow you to do is display your phone number.
Right.
Which is like a feature for some places like, oh, I want this displayed so you can contact the business.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. It's like Wasabi's Instagram page might have their phone number and you can call ahead to make sure you have a table or something.
Right. So I understand why that is a functionality, but upon doing this, without me realizing it, my phone number, which was already attached to my Instagram account, suddenly became public.
Oh.
And this wasn't like a huge deal. It wasn't like all of a sudden my phone went crazy. But I did all of a sudden, like at maybe like later that day, someone did call me and they were like, are you from the Super Carlin Brothers? And I was like, yeah. Like, I don't know who you are. And they just sort of, I think, immediately launched into something about some theory or something. I was like, oh, it was fast. But my response was just, hey, I'm sorry. Thank you so much for watching the channel. I don't know how you got my phone number, but this is crossing a line. So thanks for watching, but I'm going to hang up.
Yeah. No, and I think that's probably the perfect thing to do.
And then to I will say that if this happens to be the person listening, they actually, I think they felt super bad. And they did send me a text, like, which was ballsy when I think about it, like, given what I told them.
Right.
But they were saying that, like, they told me where they had found the number and that that I might want to take it down. And they just basically alerted me to the Instagram situation, which was good because I was unaware of it.
Right.
And from their perspective, it was like, this person's listing their number. You know, like, I understood what happened.
Yeah.
After the fact. Like, but that was my response in the moment. And I took my phone number down and it has not been a problem since.
Oh, man. Yeah, that is an interesting one. But I think the text message was a good follow up because it's kind of like there are creators out there right now that I think, I don't know how it works, but you can get like a special phone number that you can like tweet out and be like, hey, do you want to text for a minute? And it's not like your phone number. Like, right. I think like Philip DeFranco, you know, does this every once in a while. And it's a way to get some like fan engagement.
Yeah,
or, you know,
I saw
whatever.
One of our friends, Amanda Rachley, did like a, you could like call on like a radio show.
Oh, cool.
And she like talked to fans for a couple hours one night or something. I was like, oh, that's a fun idea.
That is a fun idea.
Yeah. Oh,
I love it.
I think they were live streaming it too, so everyone was listening. But
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it's kind of cool. That's like, I think kind of going back to the very beginning of the conversation, I remember when we were kids, there used to be these, like, I think they were, like, 10 o'clock tuck-ins. Do you remember this?
Oh, on Star Country.
94.9.
94.9.
Star Country. Jazzy J.
More like with Bret Hart and Robin James.
That's the actual people, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like I could say them. They're public figures, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
They would do this thing, and I think that, like, I would sit there and I would like be doing like my homework or reading a book at night, and I'd be like listening to them do the 10 o'clock tuck-ins. And all you had to do was call in and just say like, you know, hi, my name is so-and-so and I want to tuck in this person. And then if they're listening on their end, then they get to like, you know, hear you tuck them in or whatever. And it was kind of a cool thing. And so I remember doing that, and they must have operated enough at like a delay to where like you would call in, you'd have like your little blurb, and then it would be like another 15 minutes before it would like come on. Maybe that's even so you could like alert the person and like, hey, like go get on there.
Or so that you listen for another 15 minutes.
Or maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, it's probably so that you could alert the person.
Right. But so anyway, I did call in once, and I think that was like one of those little moments of like, I was like, I'm so famous. like I was on the radio.
Amazing.
With like, you know, 400 other people that night. But
right.
Either way, it was still pretty cool.
That's fun.
I think I tucked in Tyler, our little brother.
Oh, wow. Look at you. Way to go.
Yeah, I think it was like one of those things where I called in and I didn't really have a plan.
Well, calling into the radio is kind of hard to get through.
It is. I'm always blown away, and tell me if you feel the same way, that like the way that people carry themselves on the radio is as if they call in their like regular guest spots.
Yeah.
Like, if it was me, I feel like my voice would be trembling. I'd be stammering on my words. Like, I would be so nervous. And all like people hop on, they're like, hey, how's it going? This is, you know, Janet driving to work.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
where
Janet.
Where are you calling from, Janet?
Janet, you missed your calling as a radio DJ. You are doing great right now, Janet. And congratulations on your free monster truck t-shirt. Which is what I assume she won by calling in.
You probably get like a family four-pack of tickets to
a family four-pack. Wow. Yeah. Do you know t-shirt?
Well, it might come with a t-shirt, but to just give away a t-shirt, that wouldn't really get people psyched about Monster Jam, I don't think.
No, okay. You know, t-shirt's not enough. You know what's fun, though, is t-shirt cannons.
T-shirt cannons are fun.
Like, what is it about being the recipient of a t-shirted cannon, a cannoned t-shirt, rather?
Mm.
I got it wrong the first time.
Yeah.
I made t-shirt the verb.
Yeah.
That is just so much more exciting because most of the time they're like promotional t-shirts that are not cool.
Ooh, they're not cool, and they're largely, extra largely.
Extra largely.
They largely don't fit.
They largely don't fit. We used to call them sleep shirts as kids. You remember that?
Yeah.
We would have like extra large shirts, and we would just, that's what we sleep in.
Have you ever caught a t-shirt cannoned t-shirt or like some like a shirt thrown into the crowd?
I am trying to think, going back into my brain. I feel like you have.
Oh, many occasions.
You're like strangely good. You're like magnetic.
I am strangely good at this. This is one of my weird hidden talents. I think largely it is because, one, I'm tall.
Okay.
And two, I have really long arms. And three, I'm not afraid to be a little aggressive about it.
That's true. That is true.
People it's are like, I will reach up and grab it. And if like multiple hands are on it, I am like snatching.
Yeah, you know? See, you are the I have to think that you are the exact opposite of me,
right?
In this regard, where I would like maybe like, you know, help someone stand, you know, like the like maybe someone who like can't stand up well on their own.
Yeah,
I would like help them stand up and, you know, maybe clear a spot, make sure there's a good landing zone.
Yeah,
pick the shirt up off the ground, hand it to them.
If I would say if you're in about like a like, you know, if I'm sitting there, if you are in the tic tac toe board around where I'm sitting in terms of seats, like those 9 seats around me, that's fair game.
Doomed.
That is, you are, first of all, I'm taller than you, and I will reach harder, and I will grab harder, and I will get the t-shirt.
And I
have gotten it on multiple occasions have I gotten the t-shirt. The problem, that's the thing, if it comes near me, I will get it, but the trick is getting them to throw it near you.
Yeah.
But here's the trick. You don't want to just wait. You want to, like, you want eye contact with the person.
Okay. Because
the person throwing often needs... They're not just like aiming at the crowd in general, like, especially if it's like an arm throw, not like a t-shirt, not like a cannon throw.
Sure.
It helps them to have someone to look at.
Okay. So why is it then that whenever we go to the scare floor at Disney World, I get picked?
Oh, I don't know.
Because this is a bizarre, I might be batting 1,000. I'm not 100% sure.
The laugh floor. At Disney World.
It's like you go in and it's actually a really cool show. If you're ever at Disney World, I highly recommend it.
There's definitely a live comedian just behind stage.
There's a live comedian who is doing like active improv jokes based on the people in the audience.
Yeah.
And throughout the show, they will like narrow in on, you know, 3 or 4 people who end up being like the characters of the rest of the story. And somehow, like, I will go in and I'm like, specifically, I'm aware of the eye contact thing. And I'm like, I'm not making eye contact with anyone right now. It's like, I'm going to be like in a, you know, like a very deep discussion with the person next to me. I'm going to be doing whatever I can to not look like the target person. And it's always me.
Mm. Let me tell you, there is something about you, though, that you must exhibit some quality that they're recognizing. Because I have, well, in my days at the concert venue, I've worked with some clowns.
Some real clowns.
Oh, yeah. Not like people who are failures in life or anything. Not like this clown over here.
Poor,
like,
clowns. Names getting dragged to the dirt.
I mean, people who are professionally clowns in the circus.
Okay, I see.
Yeah. So we would have Ringling Brothers come through, which... like once a year.
Okay.
And one of the ways they promote the show is they send advanced performers into the market to like make the rounds on all the TV shows and radio shows and stuff like that. Maybe they make appearances downtown and they just pass out flyers and coupons and whatever. And my position was the guy who had to drive them around and make them appear at these spots and arrange the schedule and stuff like that.
Interesting.
So I've spent some time with some clowns, like literal professional clowns, who are so good at what they do. I remember specifically one of the things they were doing. We have this trolley that drives around road. It's just a bus, but it's shaped like a trolley.
Yeah.
It's very cute and quaint, and people like to ride it. But they were just like on the trolley one day, entertaining the people as they got on and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was never been more impressed. There was this one kid who was riding in the front who was like, at first, as many children are, petrified of these clowns. And they were like a married couple of clowns anyway, which is funny to me. They travel around in a van. I don't think they ever stopped being clowns. But anyway, they like immediately like know how to handle the situation. So they go to the back of the bus and they're like, you know, waving at him. And within like, I don't know, 5 minutes, they have completely flipped this kid's world from like scared to like having the time of their life.
No way.
It was so impressive the way they like won this kid over. And like,
so they're self-aware. I mean, and I guess you would be, but like self-aware enough that someone might be scared of you.
Yes, absolutely. Especially kids, which is who they're normally dealing with anyway. So, but they're like, oh man, they were like hilarious and stuff. Why are we talking about clowns? I forgot.
Man, we're so deep
now.
We're
so deep now into clown terror. Oh, you have a quality about you.
I have a quality,
anyway,
yeah.
Anyway.
That's what they say.
On a little bit higher scale than Ringling Brothers is Cirque du Soleil.
Okay.
Which you think of as most like the acrobatics and the crazy people doing the awesome performance and stuff. But often at the beginning of the show, before it starts, they will have their clowns on stage who are like going through. And sometimes there'll be like on stage audience participation.
Okay.
And let me tell you, these people are professional people pickers.
Really?
Absolutely. Like, people will say, like, if they get the floor seat, they'll be like petrified that they're going to get picked. They're not going to get picked. Like, if you're scared of getting picked because you're like, I really don't want to be on stage. Like, they don't, they want to put on a good show.
Oh, yeah, you know, of course. That's so the thing. If they get somebody, yeah, no, I get that. I get that. That
yeah, like,
makes sense.
They're not trying to embarrass people. They don't want to give you a terrible experience. They want to put on an entertaining show for everyone there. And they are super duper good at picking the people. It's like, you always wonder, like, man, the people are always so good. It's because the pickers are good.
Ah.
And they, I don't, like, they've been doing it long enough that they can recognize the qualities and whoever. But there must be, you would have something about you, is my guess. I don't know what it is.
But that's weird, because I would say, in general, I would be that person in the front row. They're like, do not pick me. Do not pick me. Do not pick me.
Nah, they would have something. Even, because even the people, like, you would say that, but if they did, you'd go on stage and you'd be funny.
Maybe. You know? I don't know about funny. I don't know about funny. But I do remember as a kid, also at Disney World, I think I got selected to be...
Right.
A person.
Like, you'd play along.
Yeah, I would play along.
Yeah, see,
I know
they
that.
Would know. They would know. I don't know how they know.
It's because I'm
do.
A people pleaser.
That's probably
it's like,
that's
it's like
probably
I'm
it.
Doing this for you guys.
Yeah.
And for everyone else here, but not for me.
Well, so the other, maybe we should ask our dad about this, because the other people who have the skill are reporters who have to do like man on the street type interviews.
Yes.
Where at first, like, they can like walk around and they'll just like strike out with people. But after a while, they'll just know, they can just pick out people who are walking on the street, like, that person will talk to me. If I go ask them questions, they'll be fine to talk to me. Whereas like those people, there's no chance I'm going to get them to talk to this microphone right now.
Interesting.
And they can like get real good. So I don't know, Buzzy B, but you've got you have a quality apparently that the pickers like.
Well, that must be it. That must be it. Oh my gosh, you guys. Well, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Popcorn Culture of the Pop. Again, if you guys want to go and check out our new Patreon page, I'm pretty sure that it's patreon.com/popcornculture.
Absolutely.
There's, of course, always that off chance that somehow that URL wasn't available and it's something else. But if you search hard enough.
If you search hard enough, or if you check the show notes.
The show notes.
They will direct you to our Patreon page, where you can help us choose who officially will be the host from week to week here on Popcorn Culture, and have access to fun like behind the scenes stuff, and most importantly of all, help just support the show, help pay our wonderful editor Ethan, and so that hopefully we've gotten a lot of requests to have like a video portion.
We do
of the pop as well.
That's the big thing. So we have a set in mind to do a video version of the pop. So if you're one of those people who likes to tune in and like see it visually, we are working towards making that a reality. But it does require a little bit of build out on our end. So you would of course be helping us get closer towards that goal. So guys, we do appreciate it in advance. And of course, just keep in mind, this is absolutely non-essential. And this show will never cost anything anyway.
It
so
will not.
If you care to support, we do appreciate you. And if you don't, we also appreciate you.
Yes. Thank you so much for listening.
Until next time.
Pop, pop. That was my deep radio voice.
That's pretty good, actually. Actually, we also have like new, better acoustics in the room. I feel like you do have like the boom,
yeah.
Boom.
Well, here on Popcorn Culture.
Oh, man. It's too bad we're not more into like jazz.
This is my jazz radio voice.
Let's see here.
This is Jazzy J coming at you with the word of the day.